In 2005, Mike Carlson was in his first semester of a creative writing program in Florida when he got the call to report for duty. The Marine reservist had already done 4 years on active service, mostly overseas, and settled back into civilian life. A few months later, he found himself with the 1st Battalion, 14th Marines in Iraq, with a job as the warden of the Camp Fallujah Regional Detention Facility. For 7 months, he was in charge of suspects picked up for any number of reasons. About a third, he reports, were innocent, another third, insurgents who would slit his throat if they got the chance, and the rest he describes as opportunists who will rat out their neighbors. Mike Carlson is back at the University of Central Florida, where he's pursuing a master's degree in creative writing. His article, The Warden of Fallujah, appeared in the Los Angeles Times earlier this month. If you have questions for him about what he did in Iraq and how he's doing now that he's back, give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can also email us, talk@npr.org. And Mike Carlson joins us now from the studios of member station WUCF in Orlando. Thanks very much for taking the time today.
Thanks for having me on the air. I appreciate it.
And there were three numbers that you used to close that piece you wrote in the Los Angeles Times. I wonder if you can explain them for us. 55, 1,230, and zero.
Well, 55 was the number of Marines and sailors that we had at the detention facility there. And we all made it back without any serious injuries, and so we're very thankful for that. 1,230 was the basically approximate number of detainees that we processed over the 7 months, and zero was the number of Iraqis that were killed by us. We were attacked a few times, but we were never really able to return fire at any targets. Hmm. So
you had mixed feelings about that.
I did. It's as a Marine, you're taught a very sort of mission oriented ethos, and all of us were combat arms Marines. Most of the Marines that I deployed with were artillery, and they were an outstanding bunch of Marines. And I was a Stinger missile officer by original training. We were all retrained in Camp Pendleton and thereabouts before we went to Iraq in detentions and how to conduct the running of one of these facilities. And so it was a big departure from the usual mission. I mean, the usual mission is to be kicking doors and actively seeking out the enemy. And this time we were really mainly trying to, in a sense, protect the enemy. I mean, we would go along on the convoys and so forth as guards to obviously stop detainees from escaping. But there were several occasions where trucks were hit by IEDs and so forth, one in particular on a release in Fallujah where the Marines did their utmost to actually help the 10 detainees that were on the truck as well. No one was injured seriously.
There was one incident in one of those convoys, though, where you almost fired your weapon.
Yes. The one particular incident that I just remember because it happened to me was night coming back from dropping off detainees at Camp Cropper, which is near the Baghdad International Airport, and an RPG or some other projectile hit the side of the truck and bounced off and didn't detonate, and the four of us that were in the back, because we were empty at that point, having dropped everybody off, were frantically kind of looking for something to respond to, and just never saw anything. And then following the rules of engagement, we held our fire. So
you also report that during your time as the warden of Fallujah, none of the detainees in your charge were abused, though there was, again, one incident where at least one detainees, not prisoners, you make that point too, but there was one person who made you think about it.
I think that it would be, I mean, to be perfectly honest, I think it was something that did cross your mind from time to time. The fact that we had a lot of the evidence collecting was getting much, much better. The Iraqi police forces were getting much more used to the idea of collecting evidence, weapons, explosives, you know, tracing wires and so forth back to their source, and trying to put together packages to basically prosecute insurgents and get their convictions to stick. And so we had a lot of this evidence in our property room, and that was cataloged by the Marines. And you know, these photos would come across the desk, or you would see them, and you would realize that, you know, certain individuals that were in custody had done some particularly bad things. I do remember at one point we had one of the individuals who had kidnapped Jill Carroll, the Christian Science Monitor reporter, in custody. And it does cross your mind, but it's a credit to the Marines and the discipline that's instilled that was never really an issue. It was something that would sort of always just maybe cross your mind. But our philosophy was trying to be very firm but very fair towards everyone. And there were instances where detainees would actually sort of thank us for the treatment. I think most of them, it was probably the first time they ever got a complete medical workup by our doctor there on staff when they came in through the door. As they were in process, they had to be completely checked over medically and so forth. And several of them actually then went to the Fallujah Surgical on base there to get various injuries, fixed and so forth.
Let's see if we get some listeners in on the conversation. We're speaking with Mike Carlson, a former Marine now getting a degree of creative writing at the University of Central Florida. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. And this is David. David's calling us from Tempe, Arizona.
Hello.
Hi.
Did you get an opportunity to understand or empathize with the motivation of your prisoners, or did you just see them as a bloodthirsty enemy?
I don't think we saw them as particularly bloodthirsty or anything along those lines. I think a lot of their motivations, at least from what we got through conversations with the interrogation team there on the site, was probably monetary. Many of them could make more money planting bombs and so forth than they could doing anything else. And so that was definitely a big motivator for many of them.
How much were they paid typically for planting a bomb?
It varied widely. And I have to confess, it's not foremost in my mind right now. I want to say something along the lines of $100, $200, in the hundreds of dollars was the usual rate that I recall.
But you saw them as certainly as people, not as the other.
Yes, I definitely think so. I mean, we were lucky enough to have individual cells there in Fallujah, which was a great help because it allowed the Iraqis in general are very communal, and so it tended to put them a little bit on the defensive when they were alone in their cell. It also allowed, if they were acting out or if they were misbehaving in any way, for the guards to use basically a non-physical way to punish them, to per the rules of the facility, to have them stand up or to take away their mat or what have you. And so there were definitely consequences for any misbehavior. And I think what we saw at some of the other facilities and what I know from some of the things that happened at Abu Ghraib and other places is that I think a lot of the guards didn't really have a sense of being able to enforce the rules or any consequences for, any nonviolent consequences for bad behavior. But yes, I mean, I think all the guards, in a sense, had various nicknames for some of the detainees, and they did take on, definitely a human characteristic. Although we were always on our guard, and no one ever went into a cell alone. That sort of thing. It was a very up and down kind of place to work.
I should point out that the facility that you were running, no one was held longer than 14 days.
There were a few instances where people were held up to, say, 3 weeks, but that had to actually be requested in writing through the various chains of command and go all the way to the general in Baghdad. If we had to break that rule, it was very serious, and so we had to. It was very rare.
So if people were to be held longer, they would then be transferred to some other facility, presumably like Abu Ghraib.
Yes, we transferred all of our detainees to Abu Ghraib until about July, I want to say, of 06, when the facility was closed down and handed back to the Iraqis. And then after that, we transferred everyone to a facility near the international airport there.
David, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Let's see if we can get Robert on the line. Robert is calling us from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yes, I'm wondering whether your guests had heard at all about the atrocities that took place in Fallujah outside his work as a warden and the flattening of that city by the United States, and whether he had any regrets about what the United States had done in that part of Iraq.
Well, we traveled out through the city to do a release convoy. We put the detainees, we gave them all their property back and so forth. We actually paid them an allowance of, I want to say it was $6 a day for every day they were confined, and then took them to the police station there, which is pretty much in downtown Fallujah, in the center of a lot of where the fighting had gone on in 2004. And so we were able to witness, you know, pretty much firsthand every time the truck went down there, the craters and the bullet holes and so forth.
Did you see any deaths of innocent people, children, or?
No, not during. I mean, keep in mind this was 2 years after the battle, and so things had calmed down quite considerably.
Talk about what had happened there, and did you feel like it was the wrong thing for the United States to do?
You know, I honestly don't really feel very comfortable talking about that because I just wasn't there in 2004. I mean, I know the grand scheme of the way the battle went and so forth, but it's really nothing that I could comment on, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Robert. We're speaking with Mike Carlson, a former Marine now earning a degree in creative writing at the University of Central Florida. He wrote a piece called The Warden of Fallujah in the Los Angeles Times. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And I wanted to ask you, what's been the reaction to the piece since it was published?
I would say probably about 70% positive, just from what I've seen on the web and from what the folks at the Times have told me. Probably 30% think I need some sort of therapy or have a lot of unresolved anger issues. And perhaps that's the case. I don't really know. I know it was somewhat therapeutic to write the piece. I think I deliberately used the second person, the you, to try to perhaps get the average Joe to put themselves in the mindset of the Marines who were at the facility and to kind of put themselves in their shoes and feel some of the pressures. So,
interesting. Some of the interesting material you write about is about after your return from Iraq, you're reconnecting with your wife and reconnecting with a country. You're there at a university in Florida. And the people there, I guess, are about the same age as a lot of the Marines in Iraq.
They are. And for me, at least, one of the most sort of shocking things was that so many of the students here don't really pay much attention to the war. And then I think back to when I was 18, 19 years old, and I probably wouldn't have paid much attention either. But coming out of the situation where I was basically surrounded by, say, 18 to 24-year-olds, and in charge of them, and to come into the campus where I'm also surrounded by that same age group, but in a much different environment. Physically, it's very green here as opposed to the desert and so forth. It was just a little disoriented when that first day of class. So I remember one kid walked by me and threw a cigarette butt right on the grass, and I had to stop myself from trying to put him at attention and tell him to pick it up. So it's a different change.
You also write about since your return to civilian life, each night you will insert a mouth guard made of silicone before you go to sleep because your dentist informs you that you are always, always, always unconsciously grinding your teeth.
Yeah, that is true. When I went to my first cleaning, I guess, in the year or so that since I've been to the dentist, he not only did he describe a lot of coffee stains and so forth that I needed to get scrubbed off, but he just commented that the backs of my molars were really worn down, and I just didn't understand what that would have been from. And he said, "Well, I think you're grinding your teeth at night." So he sent me over to the sporting goods store for a mouth guard, and now I wear that at night, at least for the time being. So,
and can you? Is there any way to project how long it is before you feel comfortable, before you feel like a civilian again?
Oh, I think it's. I've heard people say it takes up to a year. I'm much better off now. I hit the ground in the United States in October, in California at the base. I got back to Florida in November, and it's now almost April, and I am definitely feeling a lot more integrated. You're hyper vigilant over there. Even on the FOB, you're always kind of wondering what may happen, and letting go of that, and also kind of letting go of the anger, I suppose, of that you kind of naturally have to keep that vigilance I think it's just a gradual process.
And the tension, you described the knots in your neck that would develop from time to time.
Yes. You know, I think everybody wrestled with that. And one of the things that we did at the detention facility is one of the sergeants there, Sergeant Jen, started a martial arts program. And we used to go out at night. And the Marine Corps has a martial arts program, so we're all working towards our different belts in the system. And it proved to be almost a godsend, because it would actually allow us to physically hit pads and wrestle and so forth. That I think from my leadership point of view, it's like I really welcome that, because I think it significantly cut down on the chance that anybody would lash out at a detainee. It was an outlet that was definitely a very smart idea on the sergeant's part. And then also tended, any sort of hard training like that brings a unit together.
Mm.
And definitely brought the platoon a lot more together. All the Marines did an outstanding job.
Might you have to go back?
No, I am officially on the inactive reserve list now. I did my 4 years of active duty and actually never got to deploy to Iraq because of I was located in the Far East in Okinawa. And so through a variety of circumstances, I got a letter in the mail when I was at grad school asking for volunteers. And so I signed up and went on a voluntary basis, for this mission. And I suppose I could volunteer again, but I think my wife would probably argue strongly against that. So,
Mike Carlson, thanks very much for your time and good luck to you.
Thank you very much, sir. It's been a pleasure to be on the show. And, if I may just, thank all the Marines who served with me. I really appreciate all their efforts and appreciate the opportunity, sir.
Mike Carlson, former Marine who was in charge of the Camp Fallujah Regional Center, now a graduate student at the Creative Writing Program at the University of Central Florida. You can read his article, The Warden of Fallujah, in the Los Angeles Times. There's a link on the Talk of the Nation page at npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is NPR News.